Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner, with the show brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? Jonathan Schweitzer on assignment in Israel on a missions trip. So I'm using this as an opportunity these last few weeks to kind of catch up on some emails that you send me. Some of them were sent a while ago. I apologize for taking so long to get around to them, but you know it's rare that we have an opportunity to do this on the show. And I do try to share them on the website as quickly as I can, but not too many at once because that gets to be too hard to try to keep up with, it seems to me, on the receiving end. So once a day, every weekday, I'll post something on the blog, and very often, in fact, most of the time, it has to do with an email that I've received from somebody. It's a way to try to make the show a little more interactive since we are forced to tape the show in advance due to the nature of the show and the kinds of guests we try to get on. Anyway, so here's an email that, let's see, is slugged, an explanation all people will understand. And it has commentary from the person who sent it to me. It says, very good analysis. This is one of the best explanations of why God allows pain and suffering that I've heard. A man went to a barber shop to have his hair cut and his beard trimmed. As they sat, they entered a conversation. They talked about so many things and various subjects. When they eventually touched on the subject of God, the barber said, I don't believe God exists. Why do you say that? Asked the customer. Well, you just have to go out in the street and realize that God doesn't exist. I mean, would there be abandoned children and all sorts of the violence that we see? I mean, if God existed, would there be any bad things? The customer thought for a moment, but didn't respond because he didn't want to enter an argument prematurely. Then the customer left the shop, walked out onto the street. Just after he left the barbershop, he saw a man in the street who looked dirty and unkempt. The customer turned back and entered the barbershop again, and he said to the barber, I don't believe barbers exist. How can you say that? Asked the surprised barber. I'm here, and I'm a barber? No, the customer exclaimed. Barbers don't exist because if they did, there wouldn't be people like that man outside. Ah, but barbers do exist. What happens is people do not come to me. Exactly, affirmed the customer. That's the point. God, too, does exist, but people don't come to him. That's why there's so much pain and suffering in the world. If you think God exists, send this to other people. If you think God does not exist, be blessed. And so on and so forth. That was cute. Wasn't that cute? I like that. All right, here's one called John 3:16. Are you familiar with John 3:16? I'm sure you've seen the signs of football games, but maybe you weren't sure exactly what it meant. Maybe this email will help us to understand. God is so good. This is so beautiful. John 3:16. I'm reading, by the way, right now. Could you tell? A little boy was selling newspapers on the corner. The people were in and out of the cold. The little boy was so cold that he wasn't trying to sell many papers. He walked up to a policeman and said, Mister, you wouldn't happen to know where a poor boy could find a warm place to sleep tonight, would you? You see, I sleep in a box up around the corner there and down the alley, and it's awful cold there for tonight. Sure would be nice to have a warm place to stay. The policeman looked down at the little boy and said, You, go down to the street to that big white house, and you knock on the door. When they come out the door, you just say John 3:16, and they will let you in. So he did. He walked up the steps and knocked on the door, and the lady answered. He looked up and said, John 3:16. The lady said, Come on in, son. She took him in, and she sat him down on a split-bottom rocker in front of a great big old fireplace, and she went off. The boy sat there for a while and thought to himself, John 3:16. I don't understand it, but it sure makes a cold boy warm. Then it has a little interjection here. It says, have faith in him, by the way, in this email. Then it goes on. Later, she came back and asked him, Are you hungry? He said, Or, I'm sorry, I should say that like the lady, right? Are you hungry? He said, Well, just a little. I haven't eaten in a couple of days, and I guess I could stand a little bit of food. The lady took him in the kitchen and sat him down at a table full of wonderful food. He ate and ate until he couldn't eat any more. Then he thought to himself, John 3:16. Boy, I sure don't understand it, but sure makes a hungry boy full. She took him upstairs to a bathroom, to a huge bathtub filled with warm water, and he sat there and soaked for a while. As he soaked, he thought to himself, John 3:16. Sure don't understand it, but it sure makes a dirty boy clean. You know, I've not had a bath, a real bath, in my whole life. The only bath I ever had was when I stood in front of that big old fire hydrant as they flushed it out. The lady came in and got him. She took him to a room, tucked him into a big old feather bed, pulled the covers up around his neck, kissed him good night, and turned out the lights. As he lay in the darkness and looked out the window at the snow coming down on that cold night, he thought to himself, John 3:16. I don't understand it, but it sure makes a tired boy rested. The next morning, the lady came back and took him down again and sat him to that same big table of food. After he ate, she took him back to that same big old split-bottom rocker in front of the fireplace and picked up a big old Bible. She sat down in front of him and looked into his young face. "Do you understand John 3:16? She asked gently. He replied, "No, ma'am, I don't. The first time I ever heard it was last night when the policeman told me to use it." She opened the Bible to John 3:16 and began to explain to him about Jesus right there in front of that big old fireplace. He gave his heart and life to Jesus. He sat there and thought, John 3:16. Don't understand it, but it sure makes a lost boy feel safe. You know, I have to confess I don't understand it either, how God was willing to send his son to die for me and how Jesus would agree to do such a thing. I don't understand the agony of the Father and every angel in heaven as they watched Jesus suffer and die. I don't understand the intense love for me that kept Jesus on the cross till the end. I don't understand it, but it sure does make life worth living. John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." God bless you. If you aren't ashamed to do this, please follow the directions. Jesus said, "If you are ashamed of me, I will be ashamed of you before my Father. Pass this on only if you mean it." I do love God. He is my source of existence. He keeps me functioning each and every day. You know, that guilt stuff, by the way, this is aside from the email, just bugs me. Why do we put that in there? All right, back to the email. Philippians 4:13. "If you love God and are not ashamed of all the marvelous things he has done for you, send this on." I don't think that's what Philippians 4:13 says. But anyway, take 60 seconds and give this a shot. Let's just see if Satan stops this one. All you do is simply say a small prayer for the person who sent you this. "Father, God bless this person in whatever it is that you know he may be needing this day." Nothing like a specific prayer. God bless you. You know, by the way, another aside from this email, that's why it's so important, for Christians to be in church. You know, I talk to a lot of Christians, or at least purporting to be Christians, and they talk about how, you know, well, where they are in their faith works for them, and they don't need to go to church because, church is full of hypocrites or whatever anyway. Well, join the club. Yeah, you're a hypocrite. So go to church and fellowship with the other hypocrites. Why don't you? But, you know, how are you going to pray for somebody with any sort of specificity if you don't know them? You don't know where they are. You don't talk to them. And how are they going to pray for you with any, you know, real specific prayer requests on your behalf if they don't know your life? How are you going to hold each other accountable? How are you going to learn more in a different kind of atmosphere about the truth that God has for you in your life? You feel rebuked if you don't go to church? I hope so. Get your fanny into church today. All right, so anyway, now this email says to send it out to 10 other people. And within hours, 10 people will have prayed for you, and you will have caused a multitude of people to pray to God for other people. Then sit back and watch the power of God work in your life for doing the things you know he loves. The love of Christ and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all. God bless and enjoy the day. That's very nice. I don't like the guilt trip stuff. I really don't. I don't think that we should be playing into the guilt trip stuff as Christians. So if you see a Christian email chain letter and you want to forward it along, I don't think there's anything wrong with forwarding it. Just take the guilt trip part out and then forward it as is without that. How about that? Can you do that for me? Would you? And would you say a prayer that would happen? I say that kind of jokingly, but seriously, why not? We can bring the greatest of our concerns and the least of our concerns before the Lord in prayer. Here's an email that is slugged United 93 And it's a little on the long side, I believe, but I think that it might be emotionally tugging enough that it'll be worth it. So let's give this a shot. By the way, you're listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. Our sponsor is Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? And we're catching up on emails from the email bag today. United 93 passenger had premonitions, it says here. One of the heroes of Flight 93, now immortalized in United 93, the movie, the stunning new film about the tragedy, long believed he would die young and had told his wife that his death would be in some way connected to the White House. Some analysts believe the terrorists had hijacked United 93 to strike the White House. In a startling interview with Michael H. Brown, publisher of Spirit Daily, Dina Burnett, widow of the Flight 93 passenger Thomas Burnett, recalled that both she and her husband had premonitions about Tom's early death. Burnett had been credited with being in the forefront of the courageous passengers who seized the aircraft and kept it from being used as a missile to destroy either the White House or the Capitol building. Brown recalled that it was Burnett who first called on a cell phone to alert authorities that the plane had been hijacked, told the other passengers that the World Trade Center had been hit, and warned their plane was, too, on a suicide mission. Burnett then helped organize the plan to avert another disaster. According to Dina, her husband was a devout Catholic who had come back to the church after straying in his youthful years. She said she had been so devoted to his Lord, he had been so devoted to his Lord that he had given up his lunch hour to attend daily Mass and said a daily rosary. He had been given a strong faith through his parents, Dina, a convert to Catholicism, told Spirit Daily. As an adult in his teen years and early college, he kind of got away from the church and ended up going to St. John's University in Minnesota. Tom was very intellectual, enjoyed the discourse with monks, had a lot of questions, and I think the monks provided a great insight into the faith he had grown up with and somehow had been missing. Dina told Brown that before September 11th, both she and Tom had forebodings. After our third daughter was born, I always had the feeling that Tom was not going to live long enough to raise our children, but I never talked to him about this, she recalled. I shared that thought with my mom right after the third daughter was born. She came into the hospital room and said, Dina, I guess you'll have to have another child so Tom can have his son. And I said, no, Mom, God's not going to give us a son. She said, why? And I said, because God knows that Tom won't be here to raise the children. I couldn't raise Tom's son alone. That, Dina said, was her first premonition. My mother asked me what I was talking about. I don't know why I said that, but I remember feeling an incredible sense of peace that whatever happened, everything was going to be okay. It was the week of February 24th, 1998. And I also told her then that he was going to be killed in a plane crash. It just came out of my mouth without any thought, and I didn't even think of it after I said it. It was something I was very much at peace with. It was God's plan preparing me, she added, her voice cracking, according to Brown. In 1998, Dina learned that Tom was going to daily Mass, and she said, I was a little bit surprised, but I didn't say anything, she said. He said, I feel like God is calling me to do something, and I don't know what it is. But I know it's going to have a great impact on a lot of people, he said. The reason I've been going to daily Mass is because I feel like if I can be closer to God, then I'll know that his plan is for me. From then on, Dina recalled, she and her husband spent a great deal of time talking about what God's plan for them might be. He wasn't sure, she told Daily Spirit, but to say he was intuitive is an understatement, and I knew if he felt something was going to happen, I better listen to it and trust him. One of the things we brainstormed about was that he thought it had something to do with the White House. According to Spirit Daily, the two thought perhaps the premonition meant that Tom, a very successful businessman, would go into politics. That seemed like the avenue that God was calling him for, she said, but something about that didn't feel right. So he continued praying, and we continued with our conversations from time to time about what he thought God's plan was, she said. And about a year before he was killed, Tom came to me and said, I don't know what's going to happen, but I have a feeling that you have always thought I was going to die young. I was surprised because I'd never talked to him about it. I asked him why he thought that, and he said, I don't know, but it may be something to do with God's plan for me. I'm not sure why I think that, but I need you to tell me what you think. I just shared with him. I said, well, I just always believed that we were going to not grow old together, that something was going to happen to prevent us from growing old together. One of us is going to be killed. He took me seriously, Dina told Brown. Dina said her husband took these premonitions so seriously, just a year before September 11th, 2001, he tried to double his life insurance. Burnett did double his wife's insurance, but couldn't increase his coverage because he had a health problem, sleep apnea. My feeling was that it was going to be Tom, and Tom's feeling it was going to be him, Dina recalled their worries. He just felt that whatever God's plan was for him, it had something to do with the White House, and he was going to impact a lot of people. On September 11th, Burnett, who had been on a business trip to New York City and on his homeward flight, found himself in the first-class section surrounded, it turned out, by Islamic terrorists. After passengers were moved to the rear of the plane, Burnett made several calls to Dina as the hijacking progressed. About 45 minutes into the flight, he called Dina, and when she asked if he was okay, Burnett said, "No, I'm not. I'm on an airplane that has been hijacked." At that point, the terrorists had already gained access to the cockpit and had killed the pilot and co-pilot. They also knifed a passenger. Faced with a serious dilemma, Tom Burnett and others formulated their famous plan to overtake the hijackers. Dina said after getting Tom's calls, she immediately contacted the police and FBI. When Tom next called, he said the knifed passenger was dead. Dina told him about the other hijacked planes and how two had hit the World Trade Center. "Oh, my God, it's a suicide mission," she heard him tell his seatmate as Dina filled him in on what little else was known. She recounted that her husband seemed to know that the plane was turning back east for New York, but then he seemed to realize they were heading south. "We're over a rural area," he told his wife. "It's fields. I've got to go." Brown writes, "Tom was a take-charge kind of guy, a 6'2" former football star in high school back in Bloomington, Minnesota, and Dina immediately knew that he was going to try to stop the hijackers. On his next cell phone call, Tom told Dina, "They're talking about crashing this plane into the ground. We have to do something. I'm putting a plan together." In his final call, Tom said they were waiting until they were over a rural area. "We're going to take back the plane," he said. "We can't wait for the authorities. I don't know what they could do anyway. It's up to us. I think we can do it." "What do you want me to do?" Dina asked him. "Pray, Dina," said Tom. "Just pray." The two of us were calm, eerily calm. I knew that no matter what happened, that everything was going to be okay. I remember after hanging up the phone, after each conversation with him, just saying the same prayer. I asked God to hold him in the palms of his hands. I prayed for strength for all of us and the endurance to do God's will. Dina told Brown that when she and other relatives listened to the flight's black box, the cockpit recorder, she could hear her husband barking directives as they attempted to take the plane back. "I know that he motivated those people on board that flight to do what they did," says Dina, "and I also know that had he not been on that plane, that circumstances would have been very different today." In the end, Tom, along with several other burly athletic passengers, stopped the plane from causing an even greater monumental national tragedy. His attitude was always, "Everyone else first, me last," and he really lived his life that way, his wife says. Dina, who moved back to Little Rock, Arkansas, where she attends Christ the King Church, said she harbors no hatred toward Osama bin Laden, but she wants to see al-Qaeda stopped. "The tragedy," she says, "strengthened my faith in God. I found that I was more dependent on it. It was the only comfort that I could find. It's being able to pray and feel as if I'm in the presence of God." And that's the end of that rather lengthy story that was emailed to me. It is powerful. There's a couple of things that I would like to add. You know, I don't deny that people have feelings of premonition and that God can speak to us in powerful ways and lay things on our heart and give us ideas. But, you know, you got to be careful. Just because the Burnetts might have, in retrospect, feel like, you know what, we knew this was going to happen, you got to be careful. I'll share, you know, a little bit of a personal insight. You know, for the longest time, my wife was convinced she was going to die at a certain age. And I'm not going to get into the details of all that, but she was convinced. She had this premonition. She actually had certain people that told her that they agreed that she was going to die at a certain age, certain spiritualist type of people. And that age came and went, you know, 7 years ago. So that premonition was false. There's another time when she was convinced that our son was going to pass. And she thought she knew almost exactly when it was going to be. And again, she had people who had a spiritual kind of a background, not necessarily Christian, who said that they shared that premonition. And my son's still around today, a miracle that defies the minds of modern science and medicine, to be honest. I think we've shared that story on this show in the past. So be careful about your premonitions and stuff. You know, don't totally ignore them. I mean, but take them for what they are. You know, they're premonitions. So enough said on that. This is a shorter email. This one is slug-lined, "Taking the Easy Way Out." Starts with a quote. "Leadership is about doing the right thing, not the easy thing." It's a quote by Michael Volkema, the chairman of Herman Miller. It's easy to not make a decision, because then you're not responsible for anything. No one can hold you responsible. You can always say, see, I told you it wouldn't work. When you make a decision, you're going to be held responsible and accountable for that decision. No wiggle room. Unfortunately, strategy is one of those things that people would rather talk about instead of deciding on. That's my goal today, to help you build a plan that will guide you to success. It means finding consensus in the decision. If your strategy is truly unique, it has to be built on a foundation of how people see you. How you're seen is much more important than how you see yourself or how you want to see yourself. So the decision isn't easy, and neither is consensus. In order to serve, you have to give up your personal agenda and fashion something that makes sense to others, not you. It'll also be difficult because no one understands the term consensus. It doesn't mean you'll let me put my agenda in if I let you put your agenda in. It doesn't mean you can shove what you want down someone else's throat because you're the boss, not if you really want to have everyone on fire about achieving the strategy. Some of the descriptions of consensus that reside on the web include a consensual agreement or win-win outcome of collaborative problem-solving and conflict resolution. A consensus implies a debate has taken place. The solution is generally accepted rather than a grudging compromise, and that agreement is deep-rooted enough that it can stand for some time without need to revisit the issue. General agreement in principle does not imply total agreement or unanimous assent. A method of making decisions through which a group strives to reach substantial, though not necessarily unanimous, agreement on matters of overall direction and policy, which can be supported by all. Now, that last one is from the Catholic Archdiocese. All right, again, I'll read that last one for you. This is, again, a definition or description of consensus. A method of making decisions through which a group strives to reach substantial, though not necessarily unanimous, agreement on matters of overall direction and policy, which can be supported by all. So now back to the email. Man, you mean they're ahead of most of us? How embarrassing for those of us in the secular world. We'll come out of the room with a great strategy and plan largely because of our understanding of consensus. It doesn't mean negotiating a wimpy agreement that everyone can agree on. It doesn't mean that one strategy everyone can work to agree on. It means agreeing to agree on the right strategy simply because it is the right strategy. My part is simple. I make sure that people achieve consensus. Now, this guy's a consultant, by the way. And make sure they're making decisions. No easy routes today, because if we take the easy way today, everything in the future will be much more difficult. How are you doing at building consensus? You have a team where everyone is working toward the same shared goal, or a collection of individuals all looking to get their agenda satisfied? Now, I can remember why I put this aside now, not just the reference to the Catholic Archdiocese, but, you know, let's look at this from a religious point of view, a Christian point of view. All right? It's talking about a definition for consensus and what consensus is, and really what it is about everybody just agreeing that, okay, it's the right thing to do, so let's do it. It's not about compromise and negotiating. It's about everybody agreeing, you know what? This is the right thing to do. Let's go. We need to be in consensus, if you will, with God. The Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, from a Christian point of view, right? We need to be in consensus with them. We need to be in agreement, in principle, with them. It doesn't even need to be a unanimous assent, a total agreement. God is unanimous within the Godhead. We don't have to agree. But we have to collaborate and go along. We need to be in consensus with him. We in the church need to keep this in mind. And too often it's about the individual experience, my personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You hear that a lot. And that is an important thing, to have a personal relationship with Jesus. I don't mean to minimize that. But I do mean to minimize it if it comes at the expense of magnifying God and his consensus, his rule, his plan, his right strategy, if you will, to use the vernacular of this email. It's not about us as individuals looking to get our agenda satisfied. It's about having a shared goal, working towards that same thing, and our goal needs to be shared with God. If we don't share God's goal, it's not going to be accomplished anyway. Who are we kidding? So get on board. Come aboard, we're expecting you. It's exciting and new. See, even lyrics from TV shows from the late 1970s That was a reference to Love Boat, by the way, can come into play on this program. You never know what you're going to get. And I leave you with this, a thought for the day. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. That's a quote that is supposedly attributed to Albert Einstein. Live your life that way. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Putman Plumbing and Heating, how can we make you smile, for sponsoring the show. I'm Troy Skinner. You've been listening to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. Go to the web, WFMD.com, and find the Faith Debate page there for the weekday daily updated blog. Check out old shows on the Audio Vault section of the website. And you can email me at Troy Skinner, Troy at WFMD.com. Thanks for listening. God bless.